Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk, powered this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit TourStaffordVA.com. TourStaffordVA.com. Scott Harris is here, the executive director of UMW Museums from the University of Mary Washington. Scott, it's great to have you here this morning. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. A beautiful morning it is.
It is spring, and when we talk about spring, I have not been over there to see it yet, but I may, after as we talk about it, I may be today just because it's that kind of day. The gardens at Belmont are just always spectacular, and I'm assuming this is like a really good time.
It's a great time. Belmont, Gary Melcher's home and studio, looks good all year round. We are a four-season attraction, if you will. But I think spring is when it's in its glory. And all during the pandemic, our ground staff, with support from the facility staff at the university, that aren't specifically assigned to Belmont, but we can call on them for various things. We've kept things running. We've kept things well-maintained. And those guys, especially, I'm going to shout out Dave Ludiger, Danny Carter, who are the guys that keep things wonderful, our garden manager, Jody Wilkins. And it's been a challenge, of course, to, you know, keep everybody healthy, keep things going. And without the public there, ironically, it gave us the time to really concentrate on the facility and on the grounds, but only increased our anticipation to have people back. And we are back in business. We are reopened both at Gary Melcher's home and studio and at the James Monroe Museum.
As I think about, I was going to say to you, I haven't been to seeing the gardens in spring at Belmont. It seems like a couple of years, and it's been that literally.
It would have been, yeah.
2019.
Really, no real chance unless you snuck in the afternoon or in the latter part of 2020. But yeah, as far as a spring, it probably would have been 2019. It had to have been.
But it is. It's a great garden. I mean, the gardens there and the view and what Belmont has to offer, it really is a place to. I mean, it really is just one of those jewels around here.
And we are fortunate. There's 27 acres, excuse me, encompassing the site. And a good bit of that is woodland area.
Yeah, some great trails.
Got great walking trails that are interpreted, not only the flora and fauna, but the history of the area, the history of how the property was used over time from earliest uses up through the Melcher's period. And so we're able to tell an educational story while giving you a good couple of mile workout. You do have to watch not to stub your toes along the trail. And right now, too, with the various, you know, the shad runs and others, we have had all sorts of wildlife along the river and the eagles, you know, cruising around looking for a meal and the other raptors. We are, in fact, I was going to kind of run down the things going on, but since we're on grounds and outdoors, among the things that we are resuming with modifications for COVID still a factor are the woodland hikes or woodland walks that we have gotten great popularity of over the years. And those are free. They're conducted by Virginia Master Naturalists. And they cover about a mile of the trails, both woodlands and field areas, and do touch on some of historic ruins of Belmont's past. We are keeping the group size limited. We are requiring masks and social distancing. So to register, and I'll repeat some of this, but just to register for the woodland walks in particular, our garden manager, Jody Wilken, can be contacted at jwilken@umw.edu or by calling 540-654-1839. And this and other things I'll talk about is all accessible at the website, at garymelchers.org, but I'm just sort of highlighting that, and you'll see all the details of how to do the various things we've got going on.
There are a number of things. It's got to be great to finally be... We can talk about these kind of things. Because what was it, March 15th that the museums, everything reopened?
Yes, and we had reopened in the fall. Mm-hmm. It's almost like that was a dress rehearsal in a way. And, of course, at that point, we didn't have much of a vaccine. We had no real vaccine distribution going yet. We had a lot of other uncertainties. And then we almost, practically no sooner had we sort of gotten our sea legs and we decided to close again in anticipation of the holiday surges, which... Everything we could see bore out that decision as being a prudent one. We watch carefully now the fact that there are some surges going on even locally, but the vibe feels different. I hope I'm right. Hope we're all going to be all right with it. We've got our protocols in place. We're continuing to maintain those. And, with each passing day, more people are vaccinated. We are really in a race, vaccines against the virus. And, so we'll take it a day at a time, but so far so good.
One of the more interesting shows that I will remember from last year. You and I got together by phone. You were on the phone last summer, and we just talked about just kind of how this was going to affect museums. And boy, a lot of the things that you talked about that would have to be done, you all are doing. This is really a time where you and in all museums are having to look at every little single thing. And how you can do it.
Absolutely. From, Smithsonian or Colonial Williamsburg or a Metropolitan Museum of Art down to a local county historical society or a community museum, a Civil War battlefield to a nature park. Mm-hmm. We've all had to adapt, in some cases continue to endure closings, layoffs, just the bottom dropping out of revenue, and some have not survived the process. Some may not still. Others, and I think we count our university museums in this case, have been fortunate to have a base of support that's remained fairly steady. And we've learned to adapt. We discovered this thing called the internet. I don't know if you had heard about this, but there's this way of communicating across vast distances and time zones and
seriously
diverse audiences, but you ought to look into it.
Okay.
I think it's got potential.
Okay.
And son of a gun, we found that rather than worrying about getting 50 or 60 people into a lecture hall on a Thursday night for a wonderful talk, we can have people from all over the world tuning in. Who knew? So
and that is one of the things that has been that I think I hope continues going forward, that's an option, because one of the great programs, and I've told you this, one of the great programs that I have seen around here ever was the program you and Lynn Cheney did on James Monroe a couple months ago.
Yeah, and that is we've had going over to that side of the river for a moment, the James Monroe Museum has, got the benefit of being about a subject that has a national, mm-hmm. even an international significance. And Lynn Cheney, recently writing her book on the Virginia dynasty, the Virginians who were four of the first five presidents, gave us a natural fit. Now, normally Dr. Cheney's speaking schedule and her speaking fee would just simply be out of the question for us. But COVID changed the dynamic and changed the dollar level expectation, and it brought it to within a level that we could manage with help from our friends of the James Monroe Museum. And so we were able to do that talk, and it was very edifying and informative, and we've got it in the can, so to speak. It's on a YouTube channel and Facebook Live. And so for some kinds of programs in which it is just as effective and maybe even more so to have it online, we'll continue to do that. Sorry, a little tickle in the throat this morning. But the things, and we've been talking about this a lot within the museums, we're going to continue to, the things that have more of an experiential quality to them, more of an interaction for the audience, and more of a sensory appeal are the things we're going to emphasize, I think, more in our live programming, our on-site programming as we go forward. And that includes performances, includes living history activities, mm-hmm. Crowd participation kinds of events, that sort of thing, as well as exhibits and programs, especially if it's a really prominent speaker. But we're definitely going to keep a significant amount of online content going in the future, more so than we did before, which we even talked about doing anyway. This accelerated the process.
Well, you and Lynn Cheney were so good. I didn't want my boss to see that because I thought he would sit there and say, "Why? We need to get him to do this show." So I kept that away from him.
Pshaw, but thank you.
I told him it's very kind of you. It's not available to the general public.
I do have a face for radio, though, so that's good.
We're going to take a quick break. Come back, and we are going to talk. When we come back, I want to talk about when we talk about because you mentioned just about funding and how important it is locally to get involved with things like Friends of the James Monroe Museum, Friends of Belmont. And we'll do that when we come back. Scott Harris, executive director of University of Mary Washington Museums, here this morning. More on News Talk 1230. WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harris here this morning, the executive director of the University of Mary Washington Museums. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism this morning. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. As you mentioned a few minutes ago, Scott, just about how tough a time this is, and we hear it from all the museums that come in here about how these are tough times. One of the ways that we all can get involved is becoming a friend, in your case, a friend of Belmont or a friend of the James Monroe Museum. That kind of involvement does help.
It does. It fulfills several objectives. One, obviously, it is a way for people in the community to provide direct financial support to the programs and activities that we pursue, whether it's conservation of art or history objects or the buildings and grounds that we maintain, whether it's providing educational program to school children, or to other kinds of educational audiences, or family-oriented programming that people can come and enjoy in some of the things we've done at both locations, concerts at Belmont, mm-hmm. for instance, or the trivia and other programs we've done at James Monroe. So most of that public programming is directly supported by the Friends organizations for each museum. They also, through their generosity, have helped us do things that the state budgets that we enjoy, and we're very grateful for that. That is taxpayer support that we get out of Richmond. The Friends' support allows us to do things that isn't necessarily as feasible with the other money, because most of the appropriation money goes basically to two things: salaries and to operating costs. You know, keeping the lights on and the water running, that kind of thing, which is becoming a more and more expensive proposition as time goes on, too.
Yeah.
So a lot of the fun stuff we do, the Friends help us do. And so that's an important thing. We also feel that it's another way to market the museums, to make them more visible to people by having these organizations. And these people hopefully become ambassadors for us, all of which is really a nice way of leading up to the fact that Mary Wash Giving Day is coming up less than a week from today. It's going to be April 13th, a little later this year because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And the university is focusing on a number of key areas, not surprisingly, especially with the impact of the pandemic. The direct student service needs are very high on that list and are vital for people to look at. But among the other things that are supported by Giving Day are the arts and culture elements of the university. And there's a pretty wide array. There's theater, there's the Philharmonic and other programs, but there's also the museums. And so we would encourage people, if they have a mind to want to do some support on Giving Day, you just go to givingday.umw.edu, that online site. And then if you scroll down that page, there's a section that says Areas of Support. And under that, you can click Arts and Culture. And then you will see the various organizations, including Gary Melcher's Home and Studio, James Monroe Museum. Click on that. And just in a couple of steps, Bob's your uncle, you've made a donation. And it's great. And we would be very grateful.
Well, over the years, you were the one who really got me interested in the James Monroe Museum initially, and have found it's a great resource, and it is a great museum in this community. And I was a little bit later to get onto the Belmont train. But
we got you.
You got me. You and MC Morris got me there. I could never figure out at first of all how to get there. I kept thinking, how do I don't understand.
Therein lies one of the challenges, yes.
But once you get there, it's not, the easy way, take River Road.
It'd be a heck of a lot easier when the Chatham Bridge reopens,
when
too,
that
let's
does.
Just say.
Yeah. Yes. But, no, too great. There really are a lot of really interesting programs and just the history at both of those places.
Yeah. And you know, they both came to the university's stewardship by virtue of gifts of the properties and the collections to the Commonwealth of Virginia. Commonwealth of Virginia then says, okay, how do we do this? And, oh, hey, we've got a school. At that time, literally a branch of the University of Virginia still here in Fredericksburg. Mm-hmm. So I've said before, it's a marriage of convenience. Some would call it a shotgun wedding type of a situation. But it has endured for, you know, going on, you know, 60 years in the case of James Monroe Museum, and not much less than that for Gary Melcher's home and studio. And, you know, as we often discuss both internally and externally, the museums are a responsibility that was placed upon the university by the state, but they also represent an opportunity and an asset and a way to support the educational mission and to carry the Mary Washington name to wider audiences in ways that, you know, in our biased opinion, are beneficial to everybody. So I think for a marriage of convenience, it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Well, and through the James Monroe Museum, I have a James Monroe bobblehead.
Yes, you do.
And I hope someday to have a Gary Melcher's bobblehead.
Yeah, our R&D people are hard at work on that right now. There are some pretty weird things out there right now, though. I don't know if you've seen a site called MyHeritage that takes photographs of people and allows you to do a quick software adjust that animates them.
Oh, I have seen them.
I'll have to show you off air, obviously, but or without the benefit of Mike. But we've done that to portraits of Melcher's and of Corinne Melcher's, his wife, and it is creepy and fascinating at the same time. Because there's no known video. There's no known film footage of them at all, and so this is literally the only way we have a chance to see them animated, if you will.
Yeah.
And the effects are amazing. You know. So we did it with a portrait of James Monroe, too, but an oil portrait, it's not quite the same thing. But when you've got a good, clear you know, photograph of someone and you've brought it to life, it's striking. It's a little scary to think about the implications of that for nefarious purposes, too, but we found it interesting.
Well, at Belmont, you've got to take the tour of the house is terrific, just to see so much of just to see where and how they lived and to see his original artwork there. You go to the James Monroe Museum and you've got the desk there that he worked from, and you've got china and just the artifacts there are just terrific.
Clothing and that's the great thing about that exhibit that we have. We're getting ahead of all the things I wanted to say. We're hitting them piecemeal, but that's okay. At each of our museums, we've got a physical, you know, new special exhibit in place. At James Monroe Museum, it's called Chatty History, and it's about the things that our curator and assistant director, Jared Kearney, have talked about all during the pandemic, things in his curator chats. So in addition for the objects being there in person, finally, in 3D, there are QR codes on the labels in which you can scan them on your phone, and you'll get that short version of the chat that he did. So if you happen to miss it. So you've got an audio-video component right there on your phone with the objects. At Belmont, at Gary Melcher's home and studio, we've also got a special exhibit, Beauty in the Rough, Preliminary Sketches and Drawings by Gary Melcher's. And, you know, the creative act usually occurs as a process, and more often than not, an artist's initial concept is developed by means of, you know, visual notes or sketches and studies in preparation for, you know, when he finishes a piece. Well, this is a chance to explore Gary Melcher's creative process. A very fascinating, intimate exhibition. It's open during our regular operating hours, and it'll be up till June 1st. The Chatty History exhibit at the James Monroe Museum will actually run till September. So both of them, you got plenty of time to come by. A little less time for Belmont, so you probably should come there first.
Jared Kearney, the curator over at the James Monroe Museum, when he did those, he was one of the first during the pandemic to jump on and start doing, using Facebook Live and doing those kind of things. They were just terrific. He's got a great personality to do it, But he would show these things, mm-hmm. and I would sit there for, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and just be spellbound by some of this stuff and think, you know, we've got some of that stuff right here in our backyard.
Yes. And now you can come and see it. And that's the thing that we've realized. And again, this is ironic. We had talked about this very thing before the pandemic. We were literally just getting geared up to say, we can make a couple of short videos, see how it goes. And then all of a sudden, we're cranking them out every week.
Yeah.
A little less frequency now. And the following that they got online, or the following we've had for almost any of our online programs, it's really been gratifying. We have had, in fact, I calculated all the different things both museums did for a period in the pandemic from about April to April, we had upwards of 50,000 views of all the different things we were doing. Now, granted, there are a lot of things that draw a lot more views. But for us to go from zero to that with basically no resources to do it, this was all just available for what we could sort of crank out ourselves, you know, shooting on our phones or you know, that kind of a thing. So we've been very pleased with the result. At Belmont, we do have some more in-person stuff, too, that's going to be going on. Preschool Palette, which has already been a popular program and had been adapted a bit online. We are back to doing it now in person. 2 to 5-year-olds get a chance to get some arts education in a museum setting. They do art projects. They'll have age-appropriate studio tours, colorful garden walks, and engaging stories. Now, there are a registration and a fee required for that. And again, going to GaryMelchers.org, you can click on the calendar of events, and you can find a way how to do that. We're filling up the classes. There are classes still available, at least as of my knowledge this morning, for April 12th and 14th, and for May 3rd, 5th, and 7th. And that's as far out as we've projected them right now. So that's for Preschool Palette. I had mentioned earlier the woodland hikes that we've got. We're resuming those. And those are on the last Sunday of each month. And again, go to the website. You'll be able to see the schedule of that and how to sign up excuse me, for that. The way that we've continued to do the online programming, as we said, will just be a regular feature now. And at Belmont, Hidden in Paint, a conservation retrospective, our longtime conservator that we've contracted with, Perry Hurt, is taking a look back at his 30 years of work on Belmont's painting collection, and he's had all sorts of challenges and surprises that he's found along the way, so he'll illustrate how he applied sort of a combination of chemistry and artistic skill to give really just wonderful renewed beauty and longevity to some of the works. This is an advanced registration webinar. You can register from the website, and then after that you'll receive a confirmation email. And if you can't watch it live, that's fine. Register anyway, and then you'll get the link to see it as a archive program.
So, yeah.
Excuse me. Anyway, everything, GaryMelchers.org, you'll find that.
Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism this morning. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. Scott Harrison with us this morning. Take a quick break and come back and as continue along as we talk about UMW Museums with Scott Harris. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:31.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Missed an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harrison this morning, the executive director of University of Mary Washington Museums, as we talk about UMW Museums, James Monroe Museum, and Belmont, our main focus this morning. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. As we talked about a bunch of events going on at the at Belmont, I know the James Monroe Museum also reopened and events going on there as well.
Indeed, yes. And I do, before I run down a couple of those, I do want to remind people too that we are at Belmont, the Stafford County Visitor Center. And so if you have out-of-town folks that you want to be able to get them started, orienting them to what's going on in Stafford County, as we are starting to see things reopen as we look ahead for planning. Come by the visitor center. Again, we've modified operations for COVID a bit, and we're not handing brochures out in quite the way that we did where you just come and get them. But we can get you the information on county attractions and get you started on especially if folks are coming out of town as we're starting to get families back together a bit.
Yeah.
We're there to help. James Renault Museum, again, fortunately, able to reopen, mindful of how we've got to limit our capacity a little bit still. And our weekday hours are a little short at both museums. We're closing at 4 to just allow a little bit more focus on cleaning and stuff. We are back to 5 o'clock on the weekends at both places, so we're gradually opening that up. I mentioned the Chatty History exhibit at James Monroe, which we're very excited about because it takes the product of the online experience that we've had and gives you some in-person experience of that too. But we are continuing those virtual programs, and we've got 3 coming up here that we're really very happy about. On Wednesday, April 28th, the birthday of James Monroe, we are going to have a virtual conversation with James Monroe. Isn't that amazing?
That is fantastic.
Yeah. We have no idea what he's going to say. The man's been dead for 190 years, but we think he's going to be capable of telling us a lot about his life and career. I will be moderating that seance, if you will. So it'll be fascinating.
For those people that like Coast to Coast on the station overnight, this is one of those Coast to Coast kind of stories.
Exactly. Yes, it is. It is. This is real overnight original Larry King radio kind of stuff. Yeah. That's Wednesday at 6 o'clock p.m., so 3 Pacific, as they used to say. We've obviously had a long relationship with Jay Harrison, who is our wonderful James Monroe interpreter. And James Monroe managed virus issues as governor of Virginia during his life, and he had to deal with a number of things that are in some ways relevant to today's experience. So we'll be talking about that and other things on the happy coincidence of his birthday, 6 o'clock Wednesday, April 28th. And then in May, We are fortunate that we're able to work with a lot of different folks, and we mentioned the Belmont program with the conservator there, Perry Hurt. Well, Thursday, May 20th, 6 o'clock p.m., Pages of History at the James Monroe Museum. Christy Moore, who is the CEO of Moore Archives and Conservation, will talk about how to properly care for and handle your old documents and books. So one of a series of things we like to do where we let folks get some tips and perspectives on how they might take care of their own family heirlooms or things that have passed down. So Thursday, May 20th, 6 o'clock p.m. And then we're really fortunate at James Monroe Museum to have a long time collaboration and a good cordial relationship with the White House Historical Association. We've had a number of staff members speak. We've had the opportunity. I have the opportunity to be an editorial advisor for the association's quarterly magazine, and we have another of the two of the historians from the White House Historical Association that'll be doing a program with us on Thursday, June 10th at 6 p.m., and that is Slavery in the President's Neighborhood. And the White House Historical Association started Slavery in the President's Neighborhood, a research initiative several years ago that seeks to identify and tell the stories of the enslaved and free African Americans who built and lived in and worked at the White House. Historians Dr. Matthew Costello and Lena Mann will discuss the association's initiative, highlight some of the key findings from this ongoing project, and share some of their discoveries specifically from the James Monroe presidency.
Okay.
So we're really happy to have that sort of, in some ways, academic collaboration, but also one that talks a lot about a museum that's still a functioning the functioning seat of our executive administration in the country. So all of this programming, jamesmonroemuseum.org, actually jamesmonroemuseum.umw.edu, because the .org thing isn't working at the moment. So just go, Google James Monroe Museum, you'll find us. And again, a reminder, Mary Wash Giving Day, April 13th. Go to givingday.umw.edu, and you can support both of our museums and any other aspects of UMW that you feel inclined to do.
The we mentioned a little bit earlier the program that you did with Lynn Cheney about James Monroe, and really it was about Monroe, Madison, Washington, and Jefferson.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I learned so much about that, and it shouldn't be a surprise as I thought about it and as the program went on. But the two of you talked a lot about just kind of the personal dynamics between all of them. and how it wasn't, you know, we I think in our mind we just think, oh, well, they all were from Virginia and they were founding fathers and they all were working for, you know, pulling one direction. Towards the end, they didn't get along so well with each other.
No, in different ways they didn't, and for different reasons. And it is it's a fascinating thing, and it hasn't really been written about all that much. I mean, if you paid attention at all in fourth grade, you probably heard once or twice of Virginia Dynasty, and you might have caught on to, but oh yeah, first five. John Adams gets left out in the cold.
Yeah,
you know, number two. But it was not, I think I pointed this out to Dr. Cheney, that from what I could tell, the last book written about the Virginia Dynasty was like in the early 60s, and it wasn't even that big of a book. So it is an interesting look. And she looked at it very much from that sort of relationship standpoint. What were the essential qualities? She wasn't doing a minute moment-by-moment analysis of all four. That would take a series of books. But any of the relationships there you look at, Washington and Monroe, which I've spoken about in other contexts, a fascinating thing that you can have a lot of armchair psychology about with father-son issues and hero worship and then turning bad and rebellion and how politics can poison a relationship or bring out the worst in the personalities of people. That's fascinating. Thomas Jefferson, the sort of older brother figure or uncle figure to James Monroe and James Madison, who are closer in age together, and that trio of relationships and how they played out through the Revolution and then much more the early national history of the country, because they were the ones that went, you know, 3, 4, and 5 in the presidency. There was an unbroken line between them, and yet their relationship went back even further. And then you can parse it the other ways. So, you know, Madison being a very close, really advisor of Washington initially, and then more of an estrangement, or Jefferson and Washington's relationship. So one thing that you know, we had the advantage of in talking about Monroe and the others with Dr. Cheney is that Monroe batted cleanup. So we got to spend more time on him as far as the longer executive legacy, even though Madison lived longer than Monroe did. So yeah, it was fodder for a nice discussion, and the book's a good read, Virginia Dynasty. I recommend it. Available at the James Monroe Museum store.
I'd learned so much because we hear so much about Washington and just all of his various attributes. We don't think a lot of times about the personal relationships, and especially that was just interesting with how Monroe and Washington how it was strained.
Yeah, I mean, Monroe zealously joins the Continental Army as a student at William and Mary after he'd helped raid the governor's palace and get arms and ammunition for the Patriot cause. Washington is there getting command of the Continental Army, trying to avoid getting annihilated as he you know, plays a long stakes game with the larger, better equipped British. Monroe goes up, takes part in the battles in New York and New Jersey, all that area, and then is wounded at Trenton, specially noted by Washington for his bravery, and is really, you know, given great recommendations. But then Monroe can't get a regiment together, so he goes into law and politics and ends up being on the opposite side politically of Washington, and yet is appointed minister to France by Washington, partly to get him out of the country, I think, but also just to appease his side, and yet has, in Monroe's view, the rug pulled out from under him by the Washington administration because of their diplomatic relationship with Great Britain. And so it becomes a political embarrassment and a personal affront that Monroe writes an extensive treatise about and publishes, and Washington gets a copy and marks the liner notes up and gets real catty about it, and they never really speak to each other again. And Washington, on his deathbed, is complaining about the fact that James Monroe is being lauded as he's being elected governor of Virginia. So almost literally to his dying day, he's still PO'd at Monroe. And then yet in Monroe's presidency, you find a lot of overtones that echo what Washington was doing in his. And so you wonder how much he's sort of trying to live up to that example or maybe get the last laugh. I don't know. But it is fascinating. And in the absence of being able to talk to them, we do have their letters. We have the letters they wrote and the ones that they didn't send, including one from Monroe that is really devastating, but he never actually sent it. But he really laid it out. So that's the fun of history, when you can find these sources and get into the minds somewhat of the people who were living then.
So Monroe is one of those kind of people that you vent, and after you write it out, maybe you feel better.
And to our advantage, he didn't throw a lot of that away, fortunately. And so we have someone's used the term before, the rough draft of history. And we have a lot of that in the papers of James Monroe, finding that sort of stuff and publishing some of it. And they've published this one, in fact, in one of the earlier volumes, where he just really excoriated Washington and questioned his military ability and his fidelity to the American cause and all the rest of it, and his vanity, but he didn't send it. And probably was a good idea that he didn't.
Now, on the other side of it, Mrs. Monroe, is she the one who didn't save anything?
She wanted everything, all of her correspondence burned. A number, especially the ladies of that period, did feel that way. We didn't always have the same sense of posterity, or we just had a greater sense of privacy, perhaps, for a lot of those people. Not the Adamses. They kept everything. They've cataloged it down to the nth degree. But, there are very few letters of Elizabeth Monroe's that survive, and that's too bad.
Scott Harris here, the executive director of UMW Museums. Now over to Belmont. We go over the river to Belmont. Before the pandemic, you were working on raising some money to replace a railing.
Yes, and we are very, very happy with how that is going. We just got back from Stokes of England, our blacksmithing company in Keswick, Virginia, the restored railings to the horseshoe staircase at Belmont. They are gorgeous. Just the level of detail that's visible now with many, many generations of paint and rust blasted off, and then the damaged parts repaired, and some of the rosettes they're like, we didn't really appreciate before, there's like a half dozen or so different styles of little cast iron rosettes that was put onto this wrought iron railing.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all much more visible now, and some of them were refabricated, recast to fill in missing spots. So we've got it in storage right now. We are trying to finalize our selection of stonemason. Mason we had earlier unfortunately passed away, and so we've been working to redo that. We have received some very generous support lately that we're very happy for, and so as soon as the weather is a little more reliable, we're going to get out there, get the mason going to get the steps realigned, and then work with the blacksmith to knit it all back together. I won't say now a time estimate, but I'm hopeful that before the spring is out, that we will be done. Let's just call it that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And really, it's literally a matter of getting the T's crossed and the I's dotted for the stonemason, and then just waiting on the weather, which we're pretty close, but not quite there yet.
Well, when that happens, you and I'll do a video from out
there,
because I found that to be a very interesting just seeing it and, mm-hmm. and just describing it. That's been a great project.
Well, there's a lot to talk about with that, both architecturally, what it means historically to the Ficklin family who owned Belmont at that time, and what it represented, what they wanted to say about their place and wealth. It's an opportunity to launch us into a discussion of the other folks that were there as well. I mean, the workforce that's putting that staircase in almost certainly was enslaved.
Hmm.
They were the foundation of the wealth that the Ficklins had, in large part, to be able to have that kind of property. And that's not the kind of story we've traditionally told as much there, and we need to tell more of that. And so this is one of Virginia's most endangered artifacts. It was in the first grouping of that the Virginia Association Museums did, and it was in 2011. So we are now 10 years with a lot of ups and downs and changes since that time, but we're getting that one done, and we're very happy and proud of that.
Scott Harris here, the executive director of UMW Museums. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. James Monroe Museum.umw.edu or Gary Melchers.org, G-A-R-I, Melchers.org.
Yes.
For Gary Melchers. We're going to wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harris here this morning, the executive director of University of Mary Washington Museums. Lots of good stuff going on. Again, jamesmonroemuseum.umw.edu or garymelchers.org will give you information on all the events. Next week, you mentioned, is Giving Day for
right,
UMW.
Right, April 13th, givingday.umw.edu, chance to support University of Mary Washington Museums or the other arts and culture components of the university or other things. I mean, you know, the Fund for Mary Washington is sort of the main baseline funding program. That's the unrestricted fund that helps do a lot of things. UMW, even the museums benefit in some ways from that. But we have many individual components too, so people have a wide array of choices to show their support. And, you know, it's been a bad year for everybody. And we know that. We know that with our friends groups. We know it with folks having to bear a lot of burdens of, you know, having their children at home for a year, and there's wonderful things about that, but it's also compromised work and schedules and their schooling. And then for those people that aren't working and have had to deal with that, both financially, psychologically, every other way. So we all know it's just we're glad 2020 is in the rearview mirror. We're hoping 2021 is better. And our museums, our cultural attractions, our nature sites, any of our recreational sites, as they are coming more online, as we can, I hope, you know, the gathering limits are increasing gradually. The social distancing, for the most part, is not decreasing yet. And that's still a problem for a number of us who only have so much square footage. So even if we could have 30, 50 people or more in a given spot, if they've got to be 6 feet apart, we are still limited realistically and how many we can have in the pavilion at Belmont or the garden at James Monroe. And our other sites are dealing with the same sorts of things. So getting the masks or keeping wearing masks, getting the vaccines, getting the majority done will make it possible for us all to get back closer together and enjoy our sites. So and that's my little sermon about that.
Well, we are lucky to have both the James Monroe Museum and the Gary Melcher's home and studio. You talk about all the things that are available with, you know, all the stuff the Smithsonian has. The Smithsonian doesn't have three things that we have around here. Just stay with me. This, you've got a puzzled look on your face.
No, I'm going. I'm loving it
because of the artifacts that you have, but also the Smithsonian doesn't have you, Jared, or Joanna, and we've got the three of you here.
Well, so that is a high compliment, and I particularly join you in referencing the other two, our assistant director and curator at each site, and the wonderful staffs that work with them. It's a privilege for me, and it's a great asset for our community.
Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, tourstaffordva.com. Scott Harris, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
That's it for Town Talk. Have a great day. See you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel.